T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track 4 games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
You're listening to, and we're sorry, the Ken and Curtis Show on EEI.
Big Boston Sports Weekend. Fun day to be on the radio. Ken Laird here.
Chris Curtis here. And I was talking with Mike Florio yesterday in advance of the segment this morning, and he mentioned his book coming out, Playmakers. This looks awesome, and it's sort of a lot of what we talked about when it came to the NFL just being this too-big-to-fail organization where no matter how many bad stories, no matter how few players get their concussion settlement money, no matter what happens with Ray Rice or Tyreek Hill or Andy Reid's kid, you name it, it just keeps growing. So it'll be out in a couple weeks, I believe.
Belichick's mug's on the front of it, by the way.
Cool. Oh, it is?
What's that about?
Yeah, you got Belichick and Patrick Mahomes on the cover.
Always good entertaining stuff at ProFootballTalk.com, and Mike Florio is the mastermind of that site, and the book coming out, you can pre-order the book now, right, Playmakers, Mike?
Absolutely, anywhere that you order your books, and you can actually order a signed copy that is only $1 more. I'm surprised my signature is worth a full American dollar, but that's the going rate.
Mike Florio on the Harbor One hotline, and the book is Playmakers. Big game this weekend, Patriots and Cowboys want to get to, Mike, but obviously you have enough to fill a chapter on the Gruden situation in that book if you could add an addendum to it. Is there more stuff that's going to be leaked soon?
Well, let me tell you this. It's funny. The publisher, at my urging, allowed me to open up the book and add a chapter on this, which we're close enough to publication that ordinarily that's a no-no, but I think they recognize the significance of the story. And we're sitting and waiting to see what happens next. What troubles me about this, and this is not a defense of John Gruden or of Jeff Pasch or of anyone else who may have emails that will surface in the future that requires some sort of scrutiny or job action by their employer, whoever their employer currently may be. I am very troubled by the fact that the NFL initially took 650,000 emails, buried them under 300 feet of reinforced concrete, supposedly, never to be seen again, supposedly, and then dipped into them months later, pulled out a handful of them, and used them to engineer the departure of an NFL head coach during a season. You know, the NFL is always very vigilant and zealous about ensuring the competitive integrity of a given season, and they won't change rules during a season. They won't change enforcement during a season. They're very, you know, once the season starts, it goes start to finish, and we want to do nothing that disrupts the competitive flow of those 272 games. But somebody decided in the last 2 weeks to take some of those secret emails, send them to the Raiders, and then somebody decided to start leaking them because the Raiders weren't reacting to those emails the way the league wanted. And Gruden's out of a job. And my concern is, now that these emails are weaponized, who else is going to be targeted? Who else is going to walk away from a job? And will we get to a point where somebody quietly walks away from a job and we never know why? Because they were approached with the emails that they sent to Bruce Allen or someone else, or that they sent while working for the team, and they walk away before those emails ever get leaked. It is a very sinister and potentially devastating the multiple careers type of a power that's floating around out there. And it operates as a chilling effect for anyone who was connected to the team who may be thinking, hey, I don't know what I don't remember all my, I don't know what I have, you know, and so I better not piss anybody off at the league office, or they're going to decide to cross-reference their revised enemies list with these 650,000 emails and see whether or not I did something that justifies tattling to my current employer. I'm amazed by how these emails have been used, and I'm scared for people who may be entirely innocent having to walk around worrying about the league trying to come after them.
Yeah, and Mike, I enjoyed your conversation on your show this week about this, and that, you know, you come at this as an attorney, as your trade, and, you know, this is, it's just, to me, it's essential that we separate. Obviously, the content of the emails are not defensible. Nobody here is saying anything that it is defending John Gruden for sending those emails, obviously. But the approach that the league undertook to just ruin him publicly in the middle of a season, like, I don't understand why more people in the media can't separate those two things. Both can be true. The emails were awful, and they are a fireable offense, totally. But the manner in which this whole story unfolded, and the fact that this one person in an investigation into the Redskins, not the Raiders, is out of a job.
And I haven't written this yet at PFT. This is a little preview of coming attractions. My understanding is that Dan Snyder went to the league office at some point in June and met with the commissioner, a small handful of owners, and at that meeting, the discussion was had that culminated in the punishment that was levied against him on the 1st of July, strategically released on the Thursday heading into a four-day 4th of July weekend when there was no transparency, no report, a bunch of questions about how in the hell are they justifying this after the 10,000-page Deflategate report that was fully transparent. Now we get nothing. That went away by the following Tuesday. But my point is this. As late as June, these emails were well known to the league, and they were surely known to the league before then. Why do you drop this bomb out of the blue during a season? Do it before the season. Do it in January. I don't know whether or not they knew about them in January, but the investigation was going on. At some point, they discovered them. The moment they discovered them is the moment they should have mobilized if they believed, as they did and as everyone else who I think is a reasonable thought would agree, that Gruden had to go. So if you do it in January, Mark Davis can go hire a coach. And he knows he's going to have the coach all year long instead of having to flip to Rich Bisaccia and finish a season that started with promise because this all happened in mid-October. That to me is separate and apart from the power that they have over others because they continue to keep these secret. The timing of the engineering of John Gruden's resignation is a direct blow to the integrity of the season. And let me take it one step farther. The Bears had no business beating the Raiders last weekend, and I'm sure the Bears got a boost from all this distraction and dysfunction that came out of nowhere 2 days before the game. So now you have the Bears picking up a win that maybe they shouldn't have gotten, and that affects the competitive balance in the NFC as we get closer to the playoffs. Because what if the Bears get in by one game, and it's that game that they won over the Raiders, and somebody else isn't in?
Right.
The timing of when they got Gruden out of the league has impacted and undermined the competitive integrity of the full season.
Speaking of getting into the postseason, Mike Florio, are the Patriots a playoff team in your mind? What's been the national discussion from your guys' seat about the Pats this week?
This is a very simple analysis for me. I picked the Patriots to make the playoffs before the season, so until they're mathematically eliminated, I am not abandoning ship. And it is amazing to me that they haven't won a home game yet, and I don't expect them to win a home game tomorrow, although you never know with a Bill Belichick coach team, but I think the team has potential. The problem is, as you start racking up losses, your window closes. How many more losses can you take? And we know this is a team that in 2008 was 11-5 and didn't get in. And with 17 games, nobody really has a feel for when you get to that loss that is one too many. What's it going to be this year? Does 9-8 get you in? Does 10-7 get you in? Or is somebody going to be left on the outside at 10-7? And that extra playoff berth in the AFC is a factor, too. So we're in the second year of having an extra berth, the first year of having an extra game. And I don't know what that means for the Patriots. But, you know, it would help to start winning some games, especially at home. And I'm never going to write off a team that Bill Belichick is coaching. And, you know, I thought they were going to beat the Buccaneers 13 days ago. And I was dangerously close to finding an acorn as a blind squirrel that night. And I think they do have the potential to be competitive and win more games And they would go a long way toward getting everyone's attention if they could beat the Cowboys on Sunday.
Yesterday, I was watching ESPN. They had a hot take segment on was Tom Brady the greatest free agent acquisition in NFL history? And at first, it seemed kind of laughable. But looking at his performance, seeing his salary not at the top of the market, already won one Super Bowl, he's won 13 of 14 dating back to after the bye last year. And now he says he wants to play until he's 50. Do you think there is any chance that Tom Brady is one day considered the best free agent signing in NFL history with the Bucs?
Well, absolutely. Look at it this way. The other one that I would point to is Reggie White, and it took 4 years for him to deliver a Super Bowl. Tom Brady's one for one in delivering a Super Bowl and transforming a culture, transforming a team, pulling a team together that desperately needed someone like him to come in and take over, and look at what he delivered, and look at what he's delivering now. So the book still isn't written, but it's moving in the direction where, yes, best free agent acquisition of all time. And yeah, even Peyton Manning, it took him 4 years to deliver a Super Bowl win for the Broncos. Brady got his right out of the gates. Drew Brees, it took 4 years for him to deliver a Super Bowl win. So some of the best free agent acquisitions are coming to mind, and there aren't many, because usually free agent acquisitions, you know, they don't turn a team around. Because you think of it this way, a guy has spent four or more years in the NFL and his current team is willing to let him walk away. There's a reason for that. So, I think the list is short of great free agent acquisitions, and Tom Brady is already near the top.
Hey, Mike, most people around here that feel like the Patriots have a chance tomorrow will point to the coaching edge. Do you think McCarthy is insulated enough from coaching decisions in-game that he won't be a factor tomorrow? Or conversely, could he blow it, and could Bill really out-scheme him?
Oh, he could blow it. We've seen some clock management issues that are real head-scratchers, and Jerry Jones defended McCarthy by saying other teams have clock management issues. Well, I can tell you one team that doesn't have clock management issues, and that's the New England Patriots. So if it comes down to that, if it's close and there's an issue with whether or not they call a play fast enough, or they take a timeout, or they don't take a timeout, or whatever the case may be, yeah, I give Belichick, if we do the tail of the tape, he gets the big check mark on the Patriots side of the ledger. And you never know what factor is going to determine a game, but that's a huge factor to have in the Patriots' favor if it's close.
And lastly, we had Boomer Esiason on the air a couple weeks ago, and he was praising Mac Jones as the best, if you redrafted it, best rookie quarterback in the class. Are you convinced that's the case?
Well, it depends upon what you're looking for in a quarterback. You know, Zach Wilson has that Aaron Rodgers, Patrick Mahomes potential if it can be harnessed the right way, the flick of the wrist, 50-yard throw, and it may take some time for him to reach his full potential. But Mac Jones is definitely the plug-and-play guy, the guy who comes in and runs an offense the way you want it to be run, the guy who is so smooth. And I know there are people out there that don't like it when we say this in the media, but from the first time I saw him in uniform in the preseason and the way that he moved, it's like this guy, it's like he's been around 10 years. And my guess is the 49ers once again are kicking themselves for not doing what they had wanted to do, which is take Mac Jones after they moved up from 12 to number 3, and they took Trey Lance instead, who is very raw, needs a lot of polish, may get there, may not. We've already seen from Mac Jones that he can do what needs to be done at the NFL level. So we just see what the ceiling is, and we see if they can put enough around him to win enough games.
All right, Mike Florio, thank you so much for the time today. And you can pre-order Playmakers wherever books are sold. Mike Florio's book that's coming out soon with a new chapter on the Oakland Raiders Gruden debacle.
Let me say this, too. Since we're plugging it, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but there is a ton of Patriots-related content in this book because it is a look at the last 20 years in the NFL, all of the different scandals and controversies, and the Patriots have found themselves in plenty of them. So Patriots fans are going to be very interested in this one. I had to throw that in there because, publisher wants me to get people to buy the book.
Mike, thanks for the time.
See you guys.
That's Mike Florio from Pro Football Talk on the Harbor One Hotline. And by the way, nothing got you as pissed off this week as the Aaron Rodgers stuff ripping Phil Sims for misquoting him on the Deflategate inflation, the overinflation quote. And then you go back and find all these clips where Rodgers basically, he's just lying through his teeth. I mean, he said definitively, right?
He definitively said, and this is still a story at ESPN.com. He did his weekly interview like Mac does with MF. Mm-hmm. He did it with ESPN Milwaukee. And there is a transcribed story from an interview he did around the time of Deflategate originally beginning. And he said that there should be a floor for PSI, but there should not be a ceiling. meaning he wants to be able to pump the ball up as much as possible. That's what he said in the story, and he said it on multiple occasions. Like, it's so weird, and there are things that I just never understand. One that I obviously continue to bring up on the Greg Hill Show is the fact that the Chiefs are the new dynasty, even though they've won one, and they have a ton of people that have very sketchy backgrounds that never seem to be discussed on a national level, when the Patriots, for two decades, had their cabinets looked through every day. And secondly, is Aaron Rodgers is this guy who is such a waste of talent. I mean, he's won once. Brady has been to as many NFC championship games. I'm sorry. He's been to as many Super Bowls. He's won as many NFC championships as Aaron Rodgers has in his entire career. And he comes out and he says something that's just a lie.
Yeah. And which is a great job by you, actually, to find those quotes, because that's a big story to me. If Rodgers is right and he never said that, then, because how many people during that era pointed to him and said, well, Rodgers likes his overinflated, so he's
totally
cheating as well.
It was the Mortensen tweet for the people that were looking to say that Brady was right.
Yep.
You know, it was the sign that, hey, look, another great, because in that period, Rodgers was, I'm sure, the MVP around there. So you're looking at a guy that's agreeing with Brady, just not in the direction of the PSI. But it was just like, it literally took 3 seconds. And I found Matt Damon on the Rich Eisen show saying that he had talked to Aaron Rodgers.
Of course, Damon has no credibility.
Of course, which I knew I needed to get a secondary source, so I went and found the other. And it's like, it just never, I tweeted it, I actually emailed it to Mike, it never got anywhere. It just, Aaron Rodgers just doesn't get any scrutiny whatsoever.
We get back to this Red Sox-Astros game one and the ball boy in a second, but just a couple quick plugs. First of all, Ty Law, who's been awesome with us every Tuesday, Ty M.F. and Law Tuesday, 8:30 every week, pouring V1 vodka, his vodka tonight as a celebrity bartender at Greg's Place, Howl at the Moon Boston, and Down. So head there for a good time tonight. That'll be awesome. Wiggy's got a card show today.
Oh, that's right.
So we got to get that plug in.
Where's that?
It's at Big Night Live, and I'm not sure what that venue is specifically, but I'll find it at some point.
Oh, it's right by the Garden.
Is it the one right by the Garden? Okay.
I believe.
And he should be there now, actually.
Yeah, I'm going there tonight to see Rick Ross.
So a lot going on. This week we're going to be out and about. Lou and Christian are out at the bullpen on, I called it Yawkey Way earlier.
On Lansdowne.
You almost canceled me. Yeah. Oh, it's on Lansdowne? I thought it was Jersey Street. Is it Lansdowne?
Bleacher Bar?
No, not Bleacher Bar. Bullpen.
Oh, I don't know. Bullpen, Bleacher Bar, I have no idea. Bleacher Bar is on Lansdowne, but we want to promote the right place, so I have no idea. I've not heard
it's
of Bullpen.
It's the Bullpen Kitchen and Tap. That's where they'll be.
All right.
In the afternoon. Leading up the game 3, 4, and 5. That's going to be an awesome week.
Need to win today.
Well, you said yourself, I mean, they could go down 0-2. You haven't played a home game yet, yada, yada, yada. And I do think this Astros pitching staff is very, very average right now. Now that McCullers is out of the series and this Red Sox team has been resilient, I would not count them out if they're down 0-2. However, now that you've done it this way, Eovaldi pitches tonight and you don't get him in any of those home games, which is part of the reason I think it's the worst decision Cora has made in some time. Now, Lou Maloney called in the first hour of the show and defended it and believes that still had merit. Didn't work necessarily, but he basically, to paraphrase Lou, that game was lost by Robles and by Houck. You would have gone to those guys anyway, probably, even if Eovaldi starts. The only counter to that I have is you would have had Brazier and Taylor available. You had to blow them early. And it just seems like backward thinking to me. You start your best guy game one. That's Eovaldi. He's rolling. You set the tone for the series.
Let's look at it this way, Ken. Let's say Friday morning on the Greg Hill Show, a guy called in right before they're announcing the game one starter, or Thursday, and said, hey, I think they should start Chris Sale. They'll get a couple innings out of him, and then we can start Eovaldi in game two after we lose game one. What would everybody on the show say to that person?
There's mixed opinion on it, but most people think Eovaldi...
No, there is not mixed opinion. There is mixed opinion after Cora named it. I'm saying, prior to anybody announcing this,
yeah,
if a caller had said we should start Sale...
No, everybody thought Eovaldi was like a fait accompli.
So why does everybody change their opinion then?
Because Cora has been genius, and he's playing chess when others are playing checkers. Verdugo said that about him. It was like a Belichick quote. So they feel like he's got some intel that we don't.
Oh, Verdugo, another reason why. Price, much better investment than Sale, because not only did you get Price, you got Verdugo after signing Price. Anyway, carry on.
I hold all the cards now.
See, you're trying to, like, I don't think Sale is really the story in and of himself. You're trying to compare him to Price and say he's a waste of money and lump him in.
I've just lived here my whole life, and I know if a starter getting his money in game one of the ALCS. Couldn't get into the third inning.
Curtis, you can't compare David Price and the baby that he was here and Chris Sale and his attitude and his likability.
Okay, of course you can.
Dr. Andrew said I had a special elbow.
Are we really that big? We're really children in the media that if people are nice to us, we say yay, and if they're kind of weird
and annoying? It's a tangible thing. It impacts the rest of the team in a positive way.
The rest of the team loved David Price.
I don't know about that.
What are you talking about?
Who loved David Price on the run?
Mookie, Jackie Bradley Jr., all the pitching staff. Everybody liked David Price.
Everybody, yeah.
Well, if they liked him, then that's an indictment on them.
They won a World Series thanks to him.
Yeah, he was big.
So who cares what your person... That was
my whole point. Won a World Series, too, and he was a big factor in that.
He was not near the factor of David Price in 2018. What are you talking about?
He was a factor.
How many innings pitched did he have that postseason?
I'll look it up. Barrett has that for us when he sits in from...
But, I mean, that's my entire point, is that we myself included, ripped Price all the time, and we love Sale, when in reality, Price, by any metric, was more successful in his four seasons with the Red Sox than Chris Sale has been.
Well, this guy had surgery. So he had a Tommy John surgery in the middle of it that washed out 1 year. This year is definitely, you're reaching here to get him to be as productive as he was. There is going to be some inconsistency coming back from Tommy John surgery.
His postseason ERA is over 9.
Yeah, I'm not saying he's been lights out.
That's the I'm not saying lights out.
But just
let's
focus on last night.
Awful.
Okay, so let's go to last night.
Well, that's what leads to last night. Just like David Price's failures in Toronto and Tampa,
yep,
were the story about his postseason failures until they weren't, and he won the World Series in 2018. All of that is part of the picture, and all I'm saying is that we view and react to these people in diametrically opposed ways, when in reality they're very similar, and you could actually make the argument that Sale has had a worse tenure in Boston than David Price.
But they're not that similar because Sale is hurt. He's coming off a major surgery, and he didn't pitch. He didn't fail last night based on what you expected out of him. What did you think they'd get out of Sale last night? I mean, Lou said they're hoping for 4 or 5. That's a stretch. If you got 2 innings out of Sale last night, to me, that was a win. So, and that's why they did it in game one.
So it was a win for them last night?
Well, no. I mean,
well, they got 2 innings out of him.
But they didn't get the bullpen to shut it down. But that was Cora's plan.
But that has nothing to do with Chris Sale, so you're saying it was a win.
If their bullpen had performed as Cora expected,
but that has nothing to do with Chris Sale. Do you understand?
It does.
What are you talking about?
That's the only reason they started Sale game one, because they had a full bullpen. They had their full array of guys to choose from. Cora rolled the dice and said, I think my bullpen can get me 6 or 7 innings of relief work last night. It didn't work.
But we're not talking about Cora. We're talking about Sale. So Sale did what Cora expected him to do.
I think so.
Then it's a win.
It's a loss because Cora thought his bullpen would be better. He rolled the dice and they failed. But Sale himself lived up to my expectations. If you thought he was going to go 5 innings, I don't know why you would think that.
Did you at any point during that performance last night feel like he was in control on the mound?
Well, when he struck out Altuve, I was petrified when Altuve came to the plate in a bases-loaded situation.
I mean, those 8 outs, I think I sweat through 3 different shirts. I mean, that was not a comfortable watch at all.
I agree with you. I don't think he should.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
Should have been out there. But once you put him out there, what are you expecting? 5 innings? You thought he'd go 5 innings last night?
No, I thought it was a mistake to start him in game 1.
So did I.
Right, we agree.
You know, we agree on that.
Right.
Yes.
All I'm saying is that...
So it's Cora's mistake. It's not Sale's mistake. Sale was fine based on what you wanted from him.
Right. It was a dumb move by Alex Cora.
Agreed.
We agree. 100%.
Yes. We agree.
1,000%.
Well, that's not what you're saying. You're leading this crusade to compare him to David Price
right,
and say Sale's a bust.
Well, I'm saying that Chris Sale's reaction to his performances, his awful performances in the postseason, during his career and down the stretch here, he is not at all a subject on our show or any show I listen to where people are calling into bitch about Chris Sale.
Right, because he's coming off Tommy John surgery. He's coming off a major surgery. Does anybody understand what I'm saying? 617-779-7937.
So when he pitched poorly to close out the year, you said it's Tommy John. So why was he pitching? Why is he on the team?
I don't know. I mean, they have no other options. At that point, you're like, well, we got to hope Chris Sale comes back and finds it. You know, it's a hope.
Or maybe he's okay because he's throwing 100 miles
an
hour.
He's not okay. He's inconsistent.
So David Price in 2017 was coming off elbow issues. It was a big story down the stretch. He pitched poorly in the division series against the Astros, which they lost in four games. Mm-hmm. And he was killed consistently. It was a subject all the time. When he mentioned allergies, everybody was all over him for a month about that.
This guy actually had surgery. It was not just talking about elbow issues and tingly fingers and the grass allergies.
It was clear when David Price was healthy in 2018, he was dominant. We have never seen Chris Sale like that in the postseason.
Okay. Back to the ball kid for a second. This 774 texter is right. And, of course, we're talking about here, if you missed this, because it did not get the attention it deserves in this game. The Red Sox put up three runs in the third. Kike has the homer. And then Bogarts walks, Devers singles. J.D. Martinez gets on the fielder's choice, which scores the run of the error from Altuve. And then Renfro's at the plate. He doubles down the left field line. That ball is going to the corner. It should be 4-0 Boston,
Yep. Even
with J.D. running. This ball boy, this 19-year-old, doesn't get up off the chair, just sits there.
He literally just, he's standing with he's got a little stool, that poor stool is right next to him. And the ball comes right toward him. There's a boom mic operator for Major League Baseball who runs out of the way. There's an umpire diagonally from him who had just moved away from the ball. And it stands there. It bounces off his heel and the side of the wall and back right into play when it would have gone all the way down to the left field corner.
Right. Now, this 774 texter is right. Why does the guy have a chair in the first place? Do they all have chairs? Is that normal behavior? This is more Astros cheating.
No, I remember seeing people with chairs, and what would always happen is the ball would be hit, they pick up the chair, they run away. It's like one movement.
Now, Dave in the car says his daughter is a ball girl for the Sox, so maybe he's got intel on this. Dave, does your daughter get a chair when she sits out there?
It's a bucket, guys, that probably had, baseballs in it, and they put a little pad on it, and that's what she sits on, and it's got a handle on it, and you guys are right, her first move is to take that bucket and dive into the stands, do whatever she needs to do to stay out of the way. And she has done it before. Third base is the hot corner, obviously, at Fenway. First base, you got a little bit more time to react. The netting plays into it because they can't go into the stands now because the nets are there to protect the fans. Mm-hmm. But regardless, she has to get out of the way. That is her primary job, other than give little kids the ball.
And what happens if she doesn't? Is there any repercussions or no?
No. I mean, listen, again, guys, on third base, that ball is flying. Your natural instinct is to protect yourself, if it's a fair ball or something like that. And, they just got to get out of the way. If they get hit, they're part of the play, but they just got to get out of the way of that. And to answer a previous caller's point, these girls, at least at Fenway, I can't speak at any other ballpark, these girls are softball players, former collegiate softball players. So they have some skills. It's not just that, she's the nephew of some person there or, niece or something like that. She is, these girls have been playing softball there, most of their, youth and into their 20s.
Yeah, and Dave, this guy clearly just won a hot dog eating contest. He is not an athlete down the third base.
like I said, these girls, before the beginning of the season, sometimes I would go out on the field and hit her ground balls just to get her kind of ready because most of these girls don't play collegiately anymore. They're retired. So, that's pretty much it, guys.
All right. Thanks for the call, Dave. Good insight on that.
And now it's going viral because our friend Jared Carabas from Barstool is all on board Ballboygate using the hashtag. So.
Well, good. Well, I mean, he should be. And he has a stool. It's like that episode of Seinfeld where Costanza brings the security guard the stool and he gets fired for it.
He had a stool in his pants.
Jesus. All right, we've got to get the trending. We'll get a lot of calls on this. Line it up. 617-779-7937. Chris Sale. Because Chris Sale, by the way, in the 2018 postseason was good. He beat the Yankees in a start. in ALDS game number one. 5 1/3, two earned.
Two earned?
Eight strikeouts. Closed out the World Series.
Right. That was game five of a series they were easily going to win. In his career with the Red Sox.
Second in Cy Young voting his first year here, by the way. 17 wins.
Do you want to go over their career numbers in Boston?
I don't. I want to go to training.
I win every argument, so.
Time to find out what's the news.
Now back to more of the Ken and Curtis Show on EEI.
Alex, what did you think of Chris's start, and how close or not were you to taking him out there in the second with the bases loaded?
Hey, we were close, but you know, the matchups kind of like favor us, and he found another gear. So it's something that obviously he wants more, right? He wants to go deeper in the game, but where we were bullpen-wise and the matchups that we had, we felt that that was the right time to take him out. But I do believe he threw the ball a lot better. He'll be ready for his next one, and you know, like I said, this guy, we count on him, and I think he made some good strides today.
Good strides, threw the ball better. It's a moral victory Saturday here on WBEI. It really is. I mean,
it is.
The Bradfoe's last line in this story is unbelievable. It was one loss that might have done more good than most.
Can we call him?
Well, one loss that might have done good.
What good came from yesterday?
I don't know. That was a terrible loss. You had a 3-1 lead, a very winnable game. Valdez was not that good. And Kike played the game of his life, and you lost it. And,
oh, Lord.
The only thing good about it is that Sale feels better about himself, I guess.
You think Sale feels good going 2 2/3 in a game they lose?
Well, everybody's telling him he did a great job. He did okay. His stuff was better. I will give him that. But Kike, that diving catch by Hernandez saved his ass.
Right. He was never. You felt lucky to be where you were.
Yeah.
Because he wasn't in control.
Yeah.
And, you know, the Chris Sale that they paid for, the Chris Sale they hope to come back, you know, next year when the Tommy John is fully healed, he'll go four innings and everybody will be thrilled. But I have never seen a guy get so much support for doing so little.
Now, 617 texter, Curtis, give me a break. Sale closed out the game to win the World Series. It's such a know-it-all. You know more than Belichick. Now you know more than Alex Cora. Problem solved. You should manage the Red Sox. You have so much knowledge.
Doesn't sound like you know anything about sports radio, so keep telling me what to do.
Oh, fake take, Curtis. 718 texter.
Wait, in all sincerity, if you want to compare what Chris Sale and David Price did in 2018, it's laughable. I have his stats right here. I mean, the guy's got an ERA over 9 in the playoffs. I used to think we booed those guys.
413 texter, Price had a special elbow. Get that right. 718 texter, Laird, I understand this doesn't work with the contrarian viewpoint, but every story around Price in 2018 mentioned how he was a beloved teammate. I guess. I mean, what are they going to say?
It was a really big story at the time that the teammates liked him, and that's why they wanted to get rid of him, because they thought they were following the wrong guy. But
they traded his ass.
They did trade his ass.
So if he was so beloved, why didn't that create like a locker room clubhouse derision, you know?
Well, what have they won since they traded David Price? And a bunch of those guys are no longer here.
Just won the ALDS.
Those guys aren't, you know, they're not here. So if they did like him, that is a true story.
We value David Price just the same way we value Dennis Eckersley.
They had to throw him in the Mookie deal to get him out of here. That's how
they're paying half his salary.
I know. 508 texter, back in the Sony Michel discussion. I don't know how to tell you EEI guys. I know you don't follow other teams, but Sony Michel had a critical fumble with the Rams this year. I saw it with my own two eyes. I did miss that, so I just looked it up, and he did fumble this year. But you go back to week one, they trusted the rookie, Ramondre Stevenson. He fumbled in the game. Then Damian Harris fumbled in the game because Stevens didn't play the rest of the game. 40 snaps for Harris in week one, and he fumbled. They blew that game. The Dolphins' loss is still the biggest loss this year for this Patriots team. Would you agree with that? That is a huge loss. Said it at the time.
The biggest loss this year is Michelle?
No, the Dolphins' loss is the biggest loss they've suffered.
Oh, definitely. That was
that crushed. That was crushing.
I said this is a game that's going to come back to bite them, and you were yelling at me.
I was not. Going into the game, I said this game was one of the most important games of the year.
Oh, and I just saw a story Bradford wrote. The airplane that Marcus Smart didn't board in time was actually a good sign for the Celtics this year.
Get it out of your system early in the preseason.
Just the plane in preseason.
Charlie in Watertown. Hi, Charlie.
Good morning. Hey, the mistake, I think the biggest mistake was Cora not pitching around Altuve. I would have put him on and pitched to Brantley and you know, try to get a double play. I mean, to me, I think that was a big strategic error on his part. I really do, especially at that point in the game. Because you knew they were due to break out.
Was the runner on second at that time? I forget. Or no, he was just on first.
I don't remember. But either way, it would have put a runner on first and second. Yeah. I think, yeah. But
or just be careful with him anyway, yeah.
Yeah, and then the other thing I was going to say is, with regards to that ball that went down the left, I thought it hit the wall before it hit the ball boy.
It's hard to tell. I gotta be honest.
I'm trying to do this, and it's difficult to do a show at the same time. I'm trying to find like other doubles that were hit by the Astros to see if he actually moved or if he's just a waste of space every time. But he's certainly. Go ahead.
No. I was just gonna say. I thought the same thing initially before I saw the replay that ball was headed down to the corner, but I think it hit the wall and either way it was going to ricochet out. So I don't necessarily think that he caused it not to go into the corner.
Thanks for the call, Charlie. I've watched it a lot. I think it's going to, if there's nobody there, that goes right in the corner. It rolls into the corner.
But like you have these guys at Fox, you have 50 people in the truck. Like, are you not? That is an interesting part of the game. Another thing that we haven't talked about this morning is the ball that grazed the pad of Verdugo.
It was like a shirt, right?
I believe it was second and third at the time, or second.
That was in the third as well, right? That's right after the Renfro double.
Right. And
they said, I think Smoltz said, they didn't challenge it because they wanted him to bat. They didn't want Vasquez to come up or Arroyo to come up in that situation.
He speculated.
Yeah.
It looked like Verdugo was out of sorts. I think he thought that because he pointed to the ump, he said, hey, this hit me. I think he was expecting them to challenge it because he knew it hit him and he'd go to first base. And then, if you recall, the pitch he struck out on was like this flailing, horrible swing.
Yeah, he looked bad. Was Cora asked that in the postgame, Nick? See if you can find that. I don't think he was.
Keep talking about next man up. The next man up is going to be the ball boy.
Danny and Quincy time. Good morning, Danny.
Good morning, my friends.
How are you?
The next time that guy calls with the ball girl, his daughter's a ball girl, ask him why they always give the balls right to the people that are sitting first and third baseline. Why don't they throw it up in the stand to give some other people a chance?
Have you ever heard of a lawsuit?
They're afraid of somebody?
I'm sure. It's a pretty litigious society.
Yeah, it's like they have the best seats. They get all the balls as well. I mean, I used to have third base and first base seats years ago. Anyways,
Danny, we'll get you a Zach who called into the Greg Hill show who throws kids out of the way to catch foul balls. You and him can go to a game and get plenty of balls.
Yeah, anyways, the Red Sox had a chance to blow the game open in the first two innings. They had base runners everywhere. Two swings, four outs, two double plays killed them. Yeah. And Chris Sale now, is it any doubt he's got to go to the bullpen? I mean, the expectations were five innings out of him and two runs. That's what I heard. Now, Ken, you're happy with 2 2/3?
Well, I just didn't expect him to go any. Based on what we've seen of him lately, do you expect five innings from him?
That's what the expectation should have been. That's what everybody was saying. Hey, I'll take five innings, two runs.
We saw.
I mean, they definitely. I mean, where was his changeup? He wasn't throwing his changeup. He lives on the changeup.
He pitched
once.
Couldn't
get the call. I'm sorry.
Correct me if I'm wrong. He pitched one game in the Tampa series and pitched one inning. That's it.
Bullpen closer. Right. Something in it, because these games are going to be won in the bullpen anyways. I agree, you had to find out what he was all about, but he wasn't getting the high outside call. He kept going there. The umpires wouldn't call it. They were giving the low strike below the knees. They weren't giving the high one. He wasn't throwing the changeup.
So
and
who
the
starts?
Two freaking double play. I'm sorry?
Who starts games 3 and 4 then for you?
Oh, you gotta go with Pivetta. You gotta rely on Pivetta. Taylor Houck's changeup. All three of us could have hit that pitch. I mean, what was he thinking?
Yeah.
I mean, what was he thinking? But the game was lost for the Red Sox offensively in the first two innings. And then you mentioned Schwarber. They had him positioned perfectly. He had a shot that probably would have been a base hit, but they had their shift on for him. So a lot of things went right for Houston. But Sale, how many pitches, what was the final pitch count on him?
On Sale?
Yeah.
I'd have to look it up. I'm not sure.
I couldn't find it. And I know they grinded him out like the Yankees used to do to Pedro, but at least Pedro would give you six.
61
pitches.
And they
would get him out of the game.
61 pitches, 37 strikes.
Okay. 2 2/3 innings, 61 pitches, man. There's your ball game.
You would have got a standing O at Fenway if you walked off the mound, if you listen to people today. This is the world we're living in.
I mean, I called Maloney the other day, and I said, man, he's got to go to the bullpen. But I do think he deserved to start to find out what he's all about.
So you think Cora made the right call to start him?
I did say it before the game, so I got to live by it.
What? All right, Danny.
I just don't get. I mean, Lou tried to explain it to me. I give him credit. He called in. They needed the bullpen. They needed to be able to use Pivetta and Hauk in games 3, 4, and 5. So you get them out of the way early, right, in game one. And
I love this text from a 508, and it's exactly right. When Cora tees off on a par five, does he use a 7-iron or a driver? Like yesterday, it was like using the 7-iron. Like, what are you doing? And this story from Bradford, I don't know why you brought this to my attention. It's going to ruin my day. It wasn't a mystery why game one didn't demoralize the Red Sox. Now, was that like a Wiggy headline? and then you go down to the bottom of it here, and it's like,
Well, he was duped by Cora's attitude in the post-game press conference where Cora is spinning a happy tune. Well, we're optimistic. We're good.
Totally.
This is going to be a long series.
And that's the job of the manager. And then I thought, as a guy that followed the media pretty closely my whole life here, it's the job of the media to give their honest assessment.
Well, I thought Shaughnessy nailed it. I mean, I agree with Shaughnessy. He talked about Cora. The headline is, Alex Cora took a chance by starting Chris Sale in game one, but the Sox manager's luck finally ran out.
I mean, that's exactly.
Sometimes you just got to call it as you see it. It didn't work. It did not work. They lost the game. Eovaldi should have started.
And guess what? If Sale went 5 or 6 and they won, we'd be sitting here today saying ballsy move by Cora paid off again.
Or if he went 2 and gave up one run and the bullpen did their job and they won, then yes, you're thrilled, but they didn't.
But even in that situation, you're not like, you're thrilled that they won, but it's the who started the game is no longer the story, good or bad, in my opinion. If Sale had done that and they win the game, you're not talking about Chris Sale after. You're talking about Hauk, or you're talking about, you know, Garrett Whitlock. You're talking about what the bullpen did to overcome the short outing by Sale.
Yeah, I guess. But, I mean, a lot of these bullpen guys he likes, except when it got to Sawamura and Perez. Then you're in unknown territory. But at that point, I mean, Robles had been a key pickup for them. He's been pitching well. Struck out 2 guys before the Correa homer. Who's the better team right now?
The Astros lineup is just, I don't know. I think it's really, I honestly do. I think it's a coin toss. And I think that the Red Sox intangibles are real. The fact that they've been counted out over and over again. I think the Rays overall were a better team than the Astros right now.
No. The Rays?
They won 100 games. How many games did the Astros win this year?
Yeah, but that, I agree with Peralt yesterday. He was saying basically the Astros are the team that was like Brady and the Pats. They were good. They were coasting. They turn it on when the playoffs come. The lineup is just better. They didn't technically win as many games, but they knew they were going to be there.
But the Red Sox were a bigger underdog against the Rays than they are against the Astros.
I guess. I mean, this lineup, compare this lineup to the Rays?
No, I'm not saying the
outside lineup. Of Franco and Arozarena, that's those two guys scared me. This lineup scares you, top to bottom, pretty much.
I mean, The Rays had their way with the Yankees at the end of the season when they had nothing to play for. They were just trying to, you know, they were a good team.
Yeah, but I guess, but they lost Glasnow.
I think if you're just doing this on a video game and it's just whoever's better, I think the Astros win the series in like 6. Mm-hmm. But I'm not counting out the Sox yet.
No,
because they've
neither
been,
am I.
I mean, we've gotten to this point many times where it's been, I mean, think about the final day, October 3rd, a day that will live in infamy in Boston. You and I sitting there hanging out at the Sporting Club at Omni.
They're trailing the Nationals.
And they're trailing
Sale
the Nationals.
Two innings.
And you and I are, you know, belly bumping with the 2-run home run on the top of the ninth.
All right. Sitting in with us the final 2 hours is, how would you describe Brian Barrett? Did you go through the 40-page document he put together?
No, I've been stuck on this column from Bradford that doesn't make any sense.
All right, we'll get Bradford on for a crossover at 12:45. How about that? Because
yes.
He's going to Minute Maid Park today. But Barrett's going to sit in for a couple hours and spit some knowledge. We will get some Pat's talk going too. But pretty much, why did the Red Sox lose last night? Is it Cora's fault that he decided to pitch Sale? 617-779-7937 is Ken and Curtis.
To Cascade Platinum with 50%. More of the guys, Ken and Curtis. The Ken and Curtis Show on EEI.
Ken and Curtis here on a moral victory Saturday. Red Sox lose 5-4, but Chris Sale was spitting some positivity after the game as well. Michael Silverman caught up with him from the Globe. I think this was on the field. Out of my pitches, I feel like I had that last little bit I've been looking for. So for me, I'm excited to get back out there, end quote.
Can we go back to his quotes he's given in prior starts where I think he's said very similar things?
No, not really. I mean, he said, I'm terrible. I've been horrible. That's what he said before the game.
Okay. So he feels good. That's great. That's good. We'll see. Maybe next game four, he can get four innings.
He's going to start game five. Wednesday night, it'll be Chris Sale. Any doubt? I mean, they're going to start
If they're down 3-1, they start Chris Sale in game five.
What option do they have? That's why it was stupid to start him, because now Eovaldi's on it. Unless you pitch Eovaldi on short rest, Maloney said that's possible. But that doesn't sound like a good idea.
But you put yourself in a position where Eovaldi has to pitch on short rest, right?
I know.
If he pitches game one, he pitches game five at home on normal rest.
Correct. That was my point yesterday. We agree on this.
I'm not mad at you.
You sound mad.
I'm not mad at anybody. It doesn't make any sense.
Angry.
God, you're the... Who laughs more on the show than I do?
Yeah, it's an annoying laugh, though. Now, Eovaldi versus Altuve. Not good all time. 6 of 19, 3 homers and a double. So pitch around him today again, too. That's the one guy that has had Eovaldi's number.
Could you imagine an alien lands in Houston today and they see Brantley and Altuve and they're like, they're both people? They look like different species. Like, Brantley's like 6'5"?
Yeah.
And Altuve looks like he's like he should be the ball boy.
Yeah. He's pretty hated. But you did a poll question of who was more hated?
Right.
Astros or Yankees?
Right. And
Yankees
I don't want to do it because I don't want to be mad. Hated is a bad word. So who is more disliked?
Was he wearing Depends?
58% of the respondents say they still hate the Yankees more than the Astros.
Yeah. But as this series goes on, Altuve will be hated. Bregman is hated. Correa can be hated. It was pointing to the watch yesterday. They are good. There's no doubt of that. But
and I think we have some breaking news we need to get to.
Oh, yes. Let's do that quick for a second.
Ladies and gentlemen, we interrupt this program.
This is breaking news.
Oh, I was going to leave it for you because this is going to make Wiggy very happy. Go ahead.
Today, Mike Garofolo from the NFL Network is reporting that our long national nightmare is over. Cam Newton has been vaccinated.
Yes. There we go. Let's get him back in the league.
Cam Newton for MVP.
Well, that is pretty interesting. I mean, do you think he then blames that his release off the vaccination status?
On a separate subject, this reminds me of when Schefter reported that Colin Kaepernick was no longer going to kneel when he was a free agent looking to sign on.
Well, our buddy Ben Volen, quick subtweet, smart decision by Cam. Volen was 100% right about this from the start. He said Cam Newton should be vaccinated for his football best interests. He wasn't. He got cut, and now he has decided to do it because Volen was right. Admit, Volen was right about this. You guys made it some political thing, but...
I didn't make it a political thing. I said that I don't understand why you feel comfortable lecturing another man about why he should be doing something to his body.
Okay, but
that remains the case.
It was a football issue.
It's not a football issue. He's not playing in the NFL.
He might be now.
He'll be starting now that he's got vaccinated?
More likely to be signed now than before. Because if he gets COVID, he's out for over a week, as we see. That's not good. All right, 617-779-7937. Let's go to, where to go next? Tony in Salem. Hi, Tony.
Hi. So I think it was the total right call to start Sale. And here's why. Because I think this game for Sale was the most important game of his life. And he knew it. He really wanted to go out there and blow it out. I would have liked to have seen him done better, but he could have done a lot worse, let's be honest. And I do not think that he lost the game. There were tons of opportunities for the Red Sox to score. I mean, it was a close game. It was kind of like the Tampa Patriot game where, you know, you wanted one side more to win a bigger score than the other side, but it was a close game. It's just a matter of pitching duels, who out-pitched who and who out-threw who. I think Chris did, you know, well, he's done better. He's done worse. He didn't lose the game. The Red Sox could have, you know, provided more offense, got more runs. They had guys on bases. So, you know, I think it was the right call to do the first game. I think he wanted to do better. I think nobody wants to pitch better than him right now. And I think the next time we see him, I think he's going to surprise a lot of people. And I still think we're going to pull it off. And I still hate the Yankees, but Houston is my definite number two for the worst team ever.
All right, Tony.
And
good
by
call.
Frank, go ahead. I'm a huge fan of you guys. I love you guys on the weekend.
Thanks, Tony. Good vibes. We need that. We call every week because Curtis is a downer. We need some positivity, so I appreciate that.
No, Curtis is the best. You cracked me up. You guys are the best.
Okay.
Ken sucks. I love Ken, and I love Odyssey, where I find the story. This is absurd. Dusty Baker, who you know, going back to the, I felt like a kindred soul with Cubs fans when I was at BC,
mm-hmm.
and you had the Red Sox and Cubs both in the LCS going to try and get their curses or whatever, their
the
championship droughts gone, and then you have the Bartman game. But Dusty Baker yesterday compared Altuve and Correa to Brady and Gronk.
Wow, in what context?
I don't know. Bradford said it didn't make them feel bad. I don't know. I don't know the context of it. It's just the headline of the story.
Well, Hauk was reading, according to Bradfro, the four agreements, had no idea that that was Brady's thing. And then he's like, oh, well, maybe. So Bradford started comparing him to Brady. And then look what happened to Hauk yesterday.
Oh, good. The Brady curse.
Spit the bit. And that's two straight appearances for Hauk, by the way. He's given up jacks. That's not good. Have you lost faith in him?
He's been Hauking him up.
Let's go to Pete in the truck. Hello, Pete.
Hey, how you guys doing? You know, I haven't seen anything like this, like Kiki Hernandez. I've never seen this ever. And like I was saying that with Steve Pierce in 2018. I was saying, you know, I never seen anything like this.
What
is it with these guys that rise to that level? Because it's not the big name guys, you know.
And no, it's true, Pete. If you look back to the, like, 04 Sox, right, you had, like, Bellhorn out of the blue coming up big. There's always a guy or two, Steve Pierce in 2018, that is
exactly
not the biggest star, but, you know the Yankees is that a-hole Scott Brosius.
it's going to come down to the clubhouses. And I picked the Red Sox clubhouse over theirs. Because, I mean, with Cora over Dusty Baker, Cora's like...
Pete got muted.
Sorry, By the way, I had a really good nickname for Scott Brosius when I was in high school. You ready for it?
Go ahead.
Scott Atrocious.
Oh, wow. You were a pistol in college, in high school.
Open night. Open mic night.
John in the car. Hi, John.
What's up, guys? How's it going?
How are you?
To me, this Cora thing, this was a can't-miss for him with Sale. Because if he pitched well, he gets all the glory here. If he doesn't pitch well... I don't know about you. I'd much rather have Eovaldi going the second game rather than if Eovaldi loses and now you have to pitch Sale. Because you knew that if Eovaldi lost game one, your bullpen's already been taxed, and then you've got Sale coming in behind him. To me, the mistake he made was with Brazier. With this pitch count nonsense that they all follow and the computers and the this and the that, you get him out after one batter. Now, that puts Sarah Moore in the game, and... To me, ultimately, that's what cost you the game because that fifth run scored on his watch. He should have kept Brazier in for at least another inning, if not more, because he was throwing high 90s and got out of there quick.
Yeah, good point. And he's been pretty good for you. Better than Hauk, you make the case.
Just an updated line for today, according to John Anik on Twitter, who's a UFC guy but a Boston sports fan, said that it opened today, Astros -130. Now it's a pick between the Astros and Sox today. So,
okay. 4:20. Wiggy loves that start time. 3:20 pregame on the Shaw's and Star Market Red Sox Radio Network. And Barrett has been on Sox pre all year. Brian Barrett joins us next. We will chop this game up, continue to do so. Your thoughts on Sale's performance? Is there a feel good vibe to this? Is there a moral victory to the loss last night somehow?
That was a draining game to watch, man. That was exhausting.
4 hours plus.
Oh, man.
Good times. And 16 total pitchers. These are the kind of series where you need a guy like Brian Barrett to tell you what the hell is happening.
Absolutely.
Because who knows anything about Javier and Matan and the litany of pitchers that come in for Houston? I don't know.
And we need Barrett to give us the conclusive decision on if third base ball boy with the Astros should be put in jail.
And by the way, you got to watch Lou Maloney's slow motion video replay on Twitter of that incident. Is there any doubt to you it hits the kid's foot?
No, I mean, none. It hits it
and it goes directly left. It makes a left turn off the wall. That ball is in the corner, if not for the cheating ball boy.
I watched it live. I tweeted. I was shocked that Fox did nothing about it, but now they're not going to be able to avoid it because you got the Barstool guys, you got Maloney, who's got like 300,000 baseball guys that follow him on Twitter.
And Cora probably should have challenged that, right? Although, what happens if they challenge it? Does it go second
Barrett
or third?
Barrett can explain. I don't know what would happen. But also, just do at Lou Maloney on Twitter. The video is conclusive. You cannot dispute it. It is clear. It hit the ball boy.
It is ALCS Game 2 day here on WEI. It's Ken and Curtis.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.